The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the podcast. Justin Briley here, sitting in for Ruth Jackson once again this week, bringing you some bonus material before we pick up a new season of shows with Alistair McGrath. And this week and next, you'll hear my interview with Max McLean, the founder and director of the Fellowship of Performing Arts and the man behind the stage play and now film of C.S. Lewis's early life and conversion, The Most Reluctant Convert. Just before we get there, you may be aware that the C.S. Lewis podcast is part of the Premier Unbelievable family of shows and resources, and I would like to invite you to join me for Unbelievable Live, a Q&A with another great thinker and Oxford professor, John Lennox. You can join from anywhere in the world on Tuesday, the 7th of December. It'll be at 7 p.m. UK time. That's 2 p.m. Eastern if you're in the States. We'll be talking about God, science and faith, taking your questions and hearing about a new video documentary of John Lennox's life. It's called Against the Tide. That's in partnership with the film's producers, Caris Productions and Pensmore Films. Again, to book in, it's unbelievable.live. Free to register there. The link is with today's show. Look forward to seeing you there if you can make it. Now, we're in for a bit of a treat today as we hear about Max McLean's life, C.S. Lewis, and the new film, which has been out on limited theatrical release in the USA recently, hoping it'll be out on general release very soon via the usual streaming services. But you can find out more about it at cslewismovie.com. And don't forget, for all things C.S. Lewis, you can visit the show webpage at cslewispodcast.com. Max, welcome along. It's so good to have you with me. Let me do a little introduction to you, first of all. You are the founder and artistic director of the Fellowship of Performing Arts, I think based out in New York, but known all over the world for your productions, including, of course, many based on the writings and life of C.S. Lewis. And a new movie had just been released, The Most Reluctant Convert. We're going to be talking about that today, and I believe being shown across the USA in theatres and things like that. So welcome along to the show, Max.
Thank you, Justin. I think this is the second time you've had me, I believe.
I think it is. I think we last connected, I think, around the time that you were in London doing a performance of the Screwtape Letters, which I attended with my family, and we really enjoyed it. It was, I got a feeling it was something like Christmas 2017, maybe?
16, I think. 16 or 15, somewhere there. Wow. Yeah. It's been a while.
Okay, that long ago. There you go. I mean, and that alone sort of shows the way that you've been involved for so long in doing plays, productions around the writings and life of C.S. Lewis. Tell us, Max, before we get into this, the new movie, did you grow up kind of with a love of acting? Was that something that was there right from the beginning?
No. You know, I'm an immigrant. I came to America via the Statue of Liberty when I was 4 years old. In fact, we came at the West Side Passenger Terminal, which happens to be about a 10-minute walk from where I currently live in Midtown Manhattan. So the first thing I had to do was master the English language. I've been working on it ever since. So my first involvement in theater was really in college, and that was to get over a fear of public speaking, sociophobia. So that's how I got into the theater.
There you go. So it was actually to overcome the nerves of speaking in public, and now it's more or less all you do for a living.
It's all I do. Yeah.
Tell us about your Christian journey, though. Did that go hand in hand with getting into acting and drama?
Well, that's very interesting because I started acting in my senior year of college, about 22 years old, and then I had an adult conversion experience about a year later at 23. And it was meeting a woman who, if I wanted to be with her on Sunday, I would have to attend church. A very odd experience. But what was not odd was, I mean, you know, the worship experience was odd, except for some reason the Lord's Prayer that had a haunting effect because I knew it. Mm. And so that had an effect. And then met some of her friends who I graduated from college with a history degree, and one of her friends mentioned that, you know, Jesus was a person in history just like Lincoln, just like George Washington. Well, that was news to me because I thought Jesus was fairy tales. And for some reason, that little twist, opened my mind to want to read the gospel. I tried to read it in the past, but didn't get anywhere. And the person of Jesus just overwhelmed me. And so my conversion came right around that time.
Wow. That would be an interesting film in itself, I imagine. But you've obviously devoted so much of your life in a way to telling the story of C.S. Lewis and obviously producing his works as well. When do you first remember bumping into the works of C.S. Lewis, Max?
Well, this person who I was attracted to, Sharon, who later became my wife, I had the conversion experience. I'd read the New Testament. I had the year prior read Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov, which had a huge impact on me. I don't know why, but I mean, it just hit me in a very deep place. I do know why, because it's probably the greatest Christian novel ever written. But I had no experience with C.S. Lewis. So she thought, oh, I must be, you know, I would be into him. So she gave me a copy of Surprised by Joy. I was 23 years old. I read it from cover to cover, and I must say, I don't think I understood a word of it. it went by me like a freight train. But I knew I was up against a massive intellect. And I said, I don't think this is it. And I didn't get it. And he says, well, try this one. And it was a Screwtape Letters. And from page one, you know, the man in the British gets on the bus in the British Museum. I said, oh, I know this guy. This guy is, man, this guy has been in my life, you know, and so, you know, Lewis's transparency, his, you know, he deals with sin at the greed, at the spite level, you know, and so, you know, not, you know, he's not after, you know, other people's sins, crimes of humanity and all that. He's like, you know, what did you do today that was so hurtful, yeah, spiteful and yeah, mean? And I said, okay. Yeah. So that was my first introduction.
I was going to say, in that sense, you went straight to the meat, in the sense that a lot of people, obviously, their first introduction to Lewis is the Narnia stories. I mean, had you come across those at that point?
No, I hadn't even heard of them. So right. So I was never much attracted to, at least I don't recall attracted to fantasy very much. So anyway, yeah.
There you go. So as your own faith developed, you obviously eventually founded the Fellowship of Performing Arts. What took you on that journey? Did you feel that there was a need to see the Christian faith given this kind of a way of expression, you know, through the dramatic arts and so on?
Yeah, it was sort of a backdoor thing because, you know, I did not grow up in the evangelical church, so I didn't get the memo that Christians weren't supposed to be actors. And yet, you know, I went to drama school in London and I went to the National Theatre, the Royal Shakespeare Theatre, to the Old Vic, the Royal Court on an absolutely regular basis. And my imagination was constantly being engaged. And I also, you know, as a new Christian, I was really sensitive to Christian themes, you know, in all of these works. And so the idea just popped into my head, you know, why aren't Christians doing this? And they were. I mean, there was a group called Upstream that I think was doing really good work back then, in late 70s, but not in America, at least not that I was aware of. And so the idea of fellowship for performing arts emerged. You know, why not use the skills and techniques developed in the theater to present this worldview? And yeah, so that was the germ of the idea. And I was able to get people to support the idea. And that's where fellowship began.
Yeah. And I think, one of the reasons it has been so successful and has gone around the world, Max, is because you do it well. And that's not true of all art produced under the Christian banner, because sometimes, sadly, it can just mimic the world and do a fairly substandard job of it, can't it? Whereas we used to have, it appears, you know, Christian art simply was the art of its time. And so Michelangelo, anyone was, you know, it was sublime.
Yeah.
What happened? How do we kind of get back, if you like, to art that really is creative, engaging, aesthetically beautiful, that really honors God in that sense?
Well, I one of the things is that, you know, it all begins with the church, and the church in the main doesn't produce artists, or at least it didn't. It's starting to now. I mean, it certainly produces musicians. Every time I watch The Voice or America's Got Talent, or, you know, you're seeing all of these people coming out of the church. So musically, that's still the case.
We
produce some of the best. But theatrically, there's been such a suspicious element to it, and probably rightfully so. I mean, you probably know that you know, actors were not given burial rites. You know, Augustine had horrible things to say about the theater. So that has a long tradition for that. And then of course the way it was redeemed was for some kind of evangelistic purpose, agenda-driven purpose. Now, mind you, all art has an agenda. There's nothing. It's not agenda free. But the question is how do you articulate that agenda? And so what Fellowship was trying to do was we wanted to our mission was produce theater from a Christian worldview meant to engage a diverse audience. So it's a simple mission. And in order to do that, you had to select the right material. What material would at least gain the respect, you know, of the audience, and then you'd have to execute at the highest levels that your budgets will allow, so you can play the greater venues around the country. Because we made it a point not to play churches. We not that there's anything wrong with that, but we wanted to play in the marketplace of ideas where the other places were. And so to get the production values up there was really, really important.
Mm.
And then, of course, we asked people to help us do it. And so that's why we're a fellowship for performing arts. It's a fellowship of people who believe art and theater from a Christian worldview can engage the imagination and influence culture.
Mm. Well, let's talk about The Most Reluctant Convert. So I think you've produced a number of different productions that are related to Lewis. When did you decide to actually produce a stage play that would reflect his own conversion
journey,
experience?
Yeah, it began after adapting Screwtape Letters and adapting The Great Divorce from the page to the stage. Both of those works have to do with spiritual warfare, you know, temptation, kind of sins of commission and resisting the conscience, resisting the Holy Spirit, sins of omission. And in both cases, Lewis was so transparent about it. And so he was using his own personal experience, his own emotional autobiography. With that in mind, you know, we've done the two. I said, well, Lewis is always going back to his conversion, the time where he was just resisting, fighting. So that got me back to Surprise by Joy. And what I ended up doing was I didn't know, not that I knew Screwtape would be, or even The Great Divorce. I didn't think either one of those, they weren't obviously theatrical material, but they did, you know, if you worked at it and found the theatrical arc to it, you could get there. So I did try to do the same thing with Surprise by Joy. And actually, that was actually simpler because, you know, it's a change story. You know, once I was this, I was that. And what I ended up doing, and, you know, people say that, you know, for playwrights, if you really want to understand a playwright, you actually copy it out and try to figure out why he went this way instead of this way. So I actually did that with Surprise by Joy and got really inside it. And from that, I was able to craft, after many, many, many attempts and lots of development. In 2016, we did a stage production of it that ran in New York for 15 weeks and plays at colleges and universities all over the country. We had a really good run with it. Of course, with the pandemic, it just shut down. But that was the history of Most Reluctant Convert.
How many people before the pandemic shut it down? How many people had it played to by that point?
I would say roughly 100,000 people had seen it in one way. We had some 200 different performances, but more than that, around the country. And then the pandemic just shut us down. We had two shows on tour. Most Reluctant Con was doing around the colleges, and then we had a show in New York. We had a modern adaptation of Paradise Lost, and all of that went from going 100 miles an hour to zero, just like that. It was like you hit a wall.
Well, we know the devastating effect that the pandemic has had on the theatre and performing arts world, and you were no different in that sense. And many of those venues and companies only really just starting to claw their way back now. But I mean, you pivoted, quite quickly, actually, because it was this film idea, converting the stage play into a film, was that something you already had on the agenda, or was that something that was a kind of fruit of the lockdown experience?
Well, Norman Stone, who directed the piece, and you probably should say a little word about him, but he's a terrific filmmaker, has 40 years experience with the BBC and many others, a couple of Emmy Awards, a couple of BAFTA Awards. He and I met at an arts conference about 10 years ago, and we hit it off right away. We have a similar vision about what we want to do in film and art. And in the fall of 19, I called him and said, this stage play is doing really well. Would you consider having a conversation about making a film of it? And he said, well, let me see the script. So I sent him the script. He loved the script. And so we started having conversations. And in January of 2020, we made an agreement that he would do the kind of research that would be able to get us to a treatment that we could put a budget behind and decide to film it. But in my idea, that was going to be, 2022, 23 project. It was not anything immediate. And plus, we just had so many things going on. Sure. And then with the shutdown, of course, everybody thought it was going to be short term. At least we did. I don't know if you remember 15 days to flatten the curve. And I thought, what am I going to do for the next 2 weeks? and then all of a sudden it just got longer and longer. So sometime, Norman and I were having regular conversations over Zoom and Skype. He lives in Scotland, I live in New York. I think sometime in June he said, if, the British film industry is going to open back up in August under very strict conditions, and he could get a very good crew together and get a very good cast because nobody had worked since March. If we prepared to act now, and I said, well, I asked him to confirm all that and then make sure the locations we needed were available. And I would go to the board and see if I could get the funding to put it in the can. Right. Mm. And we worry about post-production and distribution later, but just get it in the can. We got the rights from C.S. Lewis Estate shortly thereafter, have a good relationship with them. And I remember on August 31st of 2020, I got on a plane as big as Air Force One with with fewer people on it from Newark to Heathrow. Went into quarantine for 2 weeks, began filming mid-September, finished filming mid-October, and came back, and here we are a year later.
Yeah, wow. Well, I remember the Facebook updates. We're friends on Facebook, Max, and And obviously you sort of, it was great to see the way it unfolded. It looked terribly exciting when I was seeing you in various parts of Oxford filming. And then I realized Michael Ward, who's a mutual friend of ours, was he's a brilliant C.S. Lewis scholar, but also has a penchant for a bit of acting himself, and was playing the part of the Church of England vicar. And so it all looked great fun. And I'm just stunned that it came together so quickly, though. It's almost miraculous. These things never come together that quickly. Normally,
well, part of it, Norman works extraordinarily fast, and you know, because he sees everything in his head. You know, he sees the pictures, and we already had the script was already, you know, such because it's been fine tuned from all these theatrical productions. So those two things were there, and then you know we had to take one of the. Things we had to do was take COVID tests like all the time, and they were just so, gosh, it was so tedious. And anyway, but any one of those tests, I mean, you know, we had 17 actors, 190 extras. So if an extra got a positive test, it probably wouldn't have done much. But if I got a positive test, or Norman, or if the cinematographer, it would have shut us down for weeks, and you know, and we would have just sat there and waited. And I don't know what would have happened, because shortly thereafter, like in mid-October, like by the end of November, there was a second wave came and they shut down filming again. So we probably wouldn't have been able to finish the film. Yeah. So it certainly has a providential element running right through it.
Tell us about the film then, because obviously shooting a film is very different to putting on a stage play, which is essentially a one-man stage play to a large degree. This obviously involves multiple characters and so on. You're still very much Lewis, but the older Lewis narrating. And I've had the pleasure of seeing the film and I really loved it. Fantastic film. It was just so good. And it strikes me that the script itself draws from all kinds of points. I was like, ooh, now this is Surprised by Joy. And ooh, now this is from this other. So tell us about how the script itself came together, what that was like then turning that into something that was obviously shot for a movie instead.
Well, the script emerged primarily from Surprised by Joy. But it also had many other sources. The problem of pain, like the opening chapter, when I was an atheist. So you get this empirical view of the experience of being on this planet alone and just looking out, you know, the universe is dark, cold, empty space. I mean, that's our empirical experience. So if you just use that, that's what you see. And so we start from that Lewis's empiricism, and you know, and he comes to, and then you get he begins to play with the statement, I think, of brilliant poetic prose: either there's no God behind the universe, a God indifferent to good and evil, or worse, an evil God. That was Lewis's empirical view of the universe, and that's kind of the starting place of the play. So you get that, Lewis giving you, this is where I was mentally at a point in time when I began to change. And then he starts talking about what contributed to that. Well, my mother died when I was 9 of cancer. I prayed, nothing happened. You know, prayer doesn't work. It was his conclusion. And then he talks about his religious education, where there's 1,001 false religions and ours is completely true. And he says, on what grounds? You know, so because he was a very smart boy and he was kind of a lout. He was, you know, a big personality. His father was a huge personality. In addition to his mother passing of cancer, he had a terrible relationship with his father, who Lewis regrets to the end of his life. He was involved in the butchery of World War I. So how could he come to any kind of other conclusion? You know, it says there was a wonderful line that when he returned to Oxford, they read the minutes of their last meeting from 1914. He returned in 1919. They read the minutes of his last meeting from 1914. And he said, you know, he said, never had I considered how big of a waste yes. the whole experience was. And somebody asked him, it says, were you much frightened in France, meaning in the trenches? And he said, all the time, but I never sank so low as to pray.
Yeah. There's just, I mean, so much material to draw on, isn't there? And the way you weave it together in the film is just wonderful. What is it like for you when you step into those shoes, when you step into that personality, when you step into the costume? I mean, just when you started quoting, you were immediately turning on the C.S. Lewis just now. Do you feel like you yourself convert from Max McLean into something like C.S. Lewis?
Well, it's really a lot of fun to be that smart for 90 minutes. I mean, to be able to say those words, and to just get into that skin. I mean, obviously I respect him immensely. And so, you know, it's almost like, the desire to be greater than you are, on so many levels. I mean, not the least of which, you know, he took the idea of right and wrong so seriously, you know, because he came to the conclusion that, you know, if the universe is just biochemistry and physics, then why should I be concerned about any kind of moral imperative? And yet he found that he was. And so he wanted to, you know, track that. I would say that where he helps me the most is his honesty coming from this dead empiricism, which really leads nowhere. And yet intellectually he thought that was justified, then going to this other place because there was something drawing him there. Some of it was the apologetic, I suppose, the dialectic of desire, the dialectic of reason. Those two things joined together were probably the biggest drivers to his conversion. And of course, that led him to just God, where he said, my religion was like that of the Jews. Yes. So he couldn't come to terms with Christ until a little bit later.
Well, we'll talk about that in the next segment of the show, because as has been shared in people like Alistair McGrath and others who've written extensively on Lewis, that there was a multiple stages, as it were, to his conversion. Bit of a special today. I'm joined by Max McLean. He's the founder and artistic director of the Fellowship of Performing Arts and stars in and has been part of the screenplay and everything else, obviously, for this new film, The Most Reluctant Convert, directed by Norman Stone. If you want to find out more about it, cslewismovie.com. That's the best place to find out how you can watch it at your earliest convenience. It is showing in theatres across the US during November. Thanks for being with me, Justin Brierley, on the C.S. Lewis podcast this week. Next time, you'll hear part two of my conversation with Max McLean, continuing to talk about this new film, The Most Reluctant Convert. And don't forget that if you like Thinking Christianity, we think you'll love Unbelievable Live with John Lennox. On Tuesday, the 7th of December, you can join from anywhere in the world for free and ask your questions of the renowned Oxford professor and thinker. Just register at unbelievable.live. For now, have a good week, and I'll see you next time.